In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about our goals for 2018. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 372. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Rob?
Well, when this episode airs, I will be with my family in sunny Florida. We're planning to hit Legoland and then spend a few days at the beach. So it's going to be a nice time to kind of warm up a bit. It's supposed to be highs in the single digits here in Minneapolis during that week. So nice to kind of get away from it and get warm. And we actually enjoy Legoland a lot, like not just our kids, but I don't know if you've been there, but I enjoy it even as an adult.
Yeah, I haven't been to Legoland. We've gone to Florida a couple times for Disney World, but I haven't gone to Legoland yet.
Yeah, I like it a lot more than the Disney stuff. It's less hectic. It's less, a little bit less expensive. And it's more about building things rather than kind of idolizing characters. I mean, there are characters in it, but there's so much about creating things and being constructive, you know? And so I think that resonates with me as a maker and with our kids as well. And like I said, it's lower key. There's some rides and there's stuff to do, but it's not so like volume turned up to 11, like I feel, and you know, a lot less crowded, like I feel Disney is.
Yeah. The other thing I found with Disney is that, you know, as you said, it's very crowded, but also getting to everything is just rather difficult. So you kind of have to hone in on like the things that you want to do, and you're going to end up waiting for pretty much anything anyway. So,
right. And the park's so big and it's hard to, and the parks are separated and on this, we had never been to Disney World and we went last year and I was kind of like, yeah, I don't know that we're going to come back. Like that may be the last time. Disneyland is fine. It's a lot smaller, but it's still crowded and you have the long lines, and Legoland is just much more, to me, it's just a much more calming or relaxing experience. How about you? What's going on?
Well, over the last 20 days, because we're recording, it's the 21st of December right now, but I've had 20 Scotch whiskeys for my advent calendar. So far, the Glenfarclas and the Pete's Beast have been the best ones so far, but there's several other runner-ups that are pretty good. So yeah, been a lot of fun, been interesting so far. There's some of them I just really did not like, but you know, most of them I would say are middle of the road. And then there's a couple that I really liked, and then there's a couple I really just did not like.
That's super cool. So you wake up every morning and have that with your cereal?
I put it in my cereal, so.
That's awesome, yeah.
No, I usually do have it at like the end of the day.
Yeah, that makes sense. So other update for me, I'm listening to the book by Tim O'Reilly. It's called WTF, What's the Future and Why It's Up to Us. And I'm kind of struggling with it. I thought it would like blow my mind. And so far, I feel mired in kind of theory or just academic thought. And I'm hoping that it picks up because I like Tim O'Reilly. I like his writing. He's a futurist. He sees things before they happen. He's the guy that named Web 2.0 because he saw the movement that was happening. And so I know there's good stuff in here, but I'm about maybe a fifth of the way, maybe 15-20% of the way through the book. And I'm kind of struggling with it. So I'm hoping that it gets better because I want to, I really want to make it through. I don't want to quit the book.
Are you listening to the audiobook?
I am. Yep.
I'm surprised that the audiobook is not as, I'll say, riveting. I mean, business books are not really riveting to begin with, but it's interesting that like even the audiobook, like it's, you'd think the pace would be pretty good and it's not, that sounds like.
And that's, you know, and I'm 1.5. No, I think I'm actually 2Xing it too. I think a small part of it could be that like I was listening to it while I was shoveling, like moving some snow off the, out of the driveway. And I don't know, I was paying attention to it, but maybe not enough, you know, it's one of those things where I'm questioning just because I know how sharp Tim O'Reilly is and how much of his writings I've liked, kind of like, is it me or is it this book is the question I've been asking. So I will, I'll try to remember to update folks once I'm all done with kind of a final verdict.
Got it. Well, the only other thing that's going on for me at the moment is I'm working on a scholarship program for MicroConf Starter Edition. And if you're listening to this and if you're interested in becoming a sponsor for a scholarship ticket, or if your company is interested in just sponsoring MicroConf, drop me an email, sponsors@microconf.com. And we'll talk about it. And I'm just kind of hacking things together this year, but trying to put something together in place that we'll be able to kind of reuse moving forward and make things better year over year.
Yeah, because sponsoring a scholarship is a big deal. You know, it makes an impact on someone who typically can't otherwise afford to go. And we've had several people do this now, to great success, you know, and we get some people coming to MicroConf who I think really get a lot of value out of it, but are just early enough in their entrepreneurial journey that they otherwise wouldn't be able to make it.
Yeah. And I mean, we've been doing scholarships for probably the past 4 or 5 years, I think, at this point, but it's always been on a very small scale. And this is kind of a concerted effort to take things to the next level and not just involve the people who approach us or just hand out scholarships on our own, but to involve corporate sponsors and kind of expand the reach of the program a little bit and more formalized. And I don't know, I think it'll turn out to be really interesting. It's just a matter of like, how is this actually going to work? So there's a lot of logistics to kind of straighten out, and had a lot of good conversations with people and answered some, I'd say, some difficult questions so far, but it's looking good so far.
Awesome. What are we talking about today?
Well, today we are going to be going through our goals for 2018. And I think to kick us off, we should probably talk about our goals from that we set back in episode 318 for our 2017 and see how we did on those.
Right. We do this every year. We like to do our goals episode, where we revisit the old ones, look ahead at the next year. And then we also do our predictions episode, which we did a couple weeks ago. So how about you? What was your first goal for 2017?
Well, my first one was to log at least 100 days of exercise this year. And I would say that, so are we going to be giving ourselves like points, like 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 4 on these?
Seems like 1 to 5, right? Scale. Yeah.
So I would say on this one, I probably have to give myself about I'd go with a 3, I think. So I logged about 50 days worth of exercise. And if you remember, like I had a partial tear in my rotator cuff. So basically 4 months of that, like I just really couldn't go to the gym, and between my back and my shoulder, like there was just no way I was going to be doing anything. So even with that though, I still got to 50. So
good for you.
How about you? What was your first one?
My first one was to not start any new projects in 2017, and it was to run the 3 microconfs with you, to continue shipping the 2 podcasts that I do, to continue working on Drip, and to just take a break from the chaos that had been my life. When I set this goal, the acquisition had only closed 5 months earlier, and so I was still reeling from that, looking ahead at 2017 as basically like a rest year or a recovery year from just the hard work and the stress and the chaos of growing Drip and then through the acquisition. And the one exception that I indicated was that I would consider being second author on the Zen Founder book, which is now launching very soon. If you go to zenfounder.com/book, you'll see a landing page there, and you can, you know, get on the launch list. It's turned out really well. It's called The Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Shit Together, How to Run Your Business Without Letting It Run You. And Sherry did the vast majority of the work, but I was involved with writing some copy and then contributing a few stories to the book. So I, on this one, give myself a 5 out of 5. That's not too hard, given that this was almost, part of this was a non-goal, you know, that I didn't want to let my perpetual restlessness push me into starting something new. But I feel like I did accomplish this just like I set out to do.
Awesome. Well, my second goal was to make Blue Tick profitable, including my time. Let's see here. If I had to give myself a grade on this one, I'd probably give it a 2 out of 5. So I definitely did not make it profitable, including my time, but it is profitable. So I feel like there's at least some level of credit there, especially given that it started out at basically 0 for MRR at the beginning of the year. So did that public launch back in August to September timeframe. Spent the last couple of months working out issues with getting people onboarded and working out various, I'll say, problems associated with that onboarding process and getting people connected and making it so that they get that value up front as opposed to much further down the road. I still don't feel like it's at a level of like 3 or 4 because I just don't think that I got far enough.
My second goal was to do 1 to 3 angel investments, and I give myself a 5 on this. I was trying to remember exactly how many, but I think I did 3. Yeah, I think I did 3, and a couple of them were subsequent like follow-up rounds in existing startups that I'm invested in. And then there was at least one new one. So yeah, I think I kind of accomplished this, and it was fun. I mean, I think I don't have this as a goal for 2018, not because I don't want to continue doing investments, but I kind of want to be pretty choosy. I always have been pretty choosy about the businesses that I invest in, and I'm kind of just taking them as they show up on my radar. You know, if I hear about them at MicroConf or hear about them on a podcast or someone approaches me, I think it makes a lot of sense for me to do it, but I'm not going out seeking. It's not like some active goal anymore. I have I was looking, I think it's like 11 angel investments that I've done. So it's not an inconsequential number. I think two or three of those are already out of business, which is how it should be, right? But yeah, I've really enjoyed the angel investment. And to be honest, it's the best part is that I'm able to like live vicariously. I'm still involved in a startup and I can still talk to the founder and I can offer, you know, advice and I can be involved in this business, but I don't have to run it day to day. And so that's been the fun part of it.
So my third goal was to blog publicly at least every 2 weeks. So it was a total of 26 blog posts. And if you recall, I think about 3 or 4 months into the year, we had gotten together and, you know, we kind of pointed out like, hey, this is probably not realistic because I haven't done it so far. And it wasn't something that was really going to get me towards my main goal, which was really making Blue Tick profitable. So we essentially canned that. But then in August or September, when I did that launch, I did like a 21-day video series. So that right there is pretty close to having that completed, even though that I basically canned it several months before. So, I mean, should I give myself a 5 on this or are we just going to not going to count it?
I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like not applicable, you know, like I punted. Goals changed a few months in. I remember when you first mentioned this, I was like, really? Are you sure you want to commit to this? And then a few months in, it was like, you need to focus on Blue Tick, yep, the revenue source. My next goal was 2 days of exercise per week. And I definitely accomplished this, especially once I learned about, through Sherry, actually, I learned about the high intensity interval training, HIIT. And it's just what I always struggle with is I don't have a lot of time and I often don't have like the extra time to like gear up and run out to the lake and then run back because kids are here in the house and I'm watching them. You know, there's this complexity with me being able to work out. And so the fact that I can throw on a YouTube video and just get my heart rate way up and be exhausted in 10 or 15 minutes in my own house while my kids are playing Legos upstairs, has really changed the game for me. And so I, for a while, in addition, I was also riding my bike to and from work 3 days a week, which is like, you know, 5-6 miles each way. It was a great little 22 minute workout each way. So I pretty much hit this with flying colors, exceeded it actually. So I gave myself a 5 here. I had many weeks where it was 3 and 4 days of exercise per week. So I'm actually, this is the first time, you know, I competed for 9 years in track and I ran the hurdles and I competed against in college against people who went to the Olympic trials. Like we were legit. I mean, I trained 30 plus hours a week almost year round. And then once track ended, I realized that I don't actually like running. It was always about the competition. It was the competition and the team that I liked, but I didn't like running itself. So like I struggle to get out there and run, even though I used to run a mile warm up, mile cool down, and then do 2 miles of intense, you know, 400 interval training. I mean, just stuff that we would throw up after practice. I mean, it was super intense, but exercise is not something that I've ever enjoyed doing in a non-competitive basis. And so this is probably the first time in, you know, in a decade or more that I'm actually kind of keeping up with some type of regimen.
So I guess with that stuff in mind, why don't we dive into our 2018 goals? Do you want to go first?
For sure. My first goal for 2018 is to write a VR program that allows you to roll around on a mattress of Bitcoins. How did this get in here? Are you messing with my list again?
Maybe a little bit.
Ah, that's a good one, Mike. I like this.
I had that idea when I was writing down my goals on our outline, and I happened to see like some advertisement for some sort of a VR helmet or VR goggles or something like that. I was like, oh, you know, Bitcoin's the rage right now. VR is the rage. You know, why not throw them together? You can, and I think part of the advertisement was also the dueling lightsabers with the VR helmets. So.
Hey, I tell you what, this Bitcoin mattress thing, that could make you a thousandaire overnight.
Yep. Definitely.
Thousandaire idea. So my first goal for 2018 may sound odd when I first say it, but bear with me on this one. My goal is to be in fewer meetings each week to get my meeting count to under 10 hours a week. And this is not a symptom of being acquired. It's a symptom of growing the team. You know, whether I was independent or not, I would be in a lot of conversations. I'm pivotal to a lot of decisions that happen. And as the team has grown, I'm called into more and more things to lend my insights, my opinions, I'm often brought in and I almost feel like a consultant who has like knowledge of the space and knowledge of the history of drip. And we want to run this by you. And I have, you know, another unique insight. So right now I'm in a lot of meetings. Don't enjoy them. I really think back to when we were 5, 8, 10 people, however, at any of those points, and we just had so few meetings and I really enjoyed it. Parts of that was to my detriment, to be honest. I think that some of the folks like who worked remote, they would have preferred to have more kind of face time, but just the way that we were running Drip was to, you know, be heads down and create the product. And so I'm working to get some things in place to decrease the number of meetings I'm in right now. And then I don't think they're going to take hold for another couple months. Part of it is hiring someone. I've already hired a senior director of product who started maybe 3 months ago, who's taken a bunch of responsibilities off my plate. And I'm looking to just kind of fire myself from other positions that require me to, you know, to spend a lot of time in conference rooms.
So on my side, I actually have two carryover goals that I want to put on there, and which is the first one was logging at least 100 days of exercise this coming year. And then the second one was making Blue Tech profitable, including my time. So those I definitely want to carry over. But in addition to that, my first goal is to read at least one business book every 2 weeks. And I think this is more of a to kind of get back involved in learning things, because I feel like I've stagnated to some extent. Like I've had my head down for so long on various things that I've probably kind of lost touch a little bit with a lot of the either things other people are exploring. And, you know, obviously, like, I don't have the time to do everything myself. So I think that, you know, just finding time to carve out to explore ideas from other people would be helpful to me, not just from a personal growth standpoint, but also in helping to grow Blue Tech.
That's interesting. If you have some particular topics or a particular topic that you kind of want to start with, let me know, because I have literally listened or read hundreds of business books in the past 20 years. And especially, you know, recently, I just do a lot of Audible. So if you have specific things you're looking for, I can certainly make recommendations. I suppose you could also ask our listeners here if you have a suggestion of a good business book that you've read in the past 12 to 24 months, maybe send it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com, and we may even mention it on the show. My second goal is 3 days of exercise per week. So it's just upping the game, you know, from last year to the level that I'm at now. And like I said, I think with the fact that it's pretty convenient for me to do right now, I'm hoping, kind of crossing my fingers, that I'm not cursing myself by upping the goal. I do have a tendency to achieve a goal and then increase it the next time and eventually just make it kind of too much, you know, more than I want to commit to or whatever. And then I just say, I'm going to stop exercise altogether because I'm not achieving it. So my goal is to not do that.
So my second goal is to hire somebody to take over Blue Tech development. And the downside of this one, I think, is that it really is heavily contingent upon making Blue Tech profitable, including my time, because unless I get to that point, it'd be really hard to hire somebody. But I also recognize that the doing the development for it is just so incredibly time consuming. And it's not just the time itself, but it's the mental energy associated with it, because there's all these little things that you kind of have to keep in your head. And when I switch over to do other things, it's really difficult to focus on them or concentrate on them. And even when I'm able to do that, if I have to go back to the development side of things, I'm really almost starting over again because of all the different things that I had in my head at the time. And I've noticed this with a couple of different major pieces that I've been working on where I have to go back and kind of relearn how certain things worked. And I struggle to do that just because sometimes so much time has passed between when I stopped working on that piece and when I start working on it again. So I think that just having somebody dedicated to working on the development side of things is really going to help out.
So just as you make Blue Tech profitable, you're going to make it not profitable again by hiring someone. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Such is life as a founder. Yeah, I think getting the development off your plate would be a huge win for you this year. It would allow you to focus on the things that, frankly, you should be focusing on more. You know, it's like development what's funny is we come up as developers and we want to build products. And then when you get to the point where you're building it, you realize, development is not not the most important thing, and B, it's not driving revenue the way that so many other things will. And that's obviously where you find yourself.
Yeah. And that's really the problem, is that there's so much development work to get done, but it doesn't directly derive revenue. And, you know, I can definitely see when different periods of time where I pull the focus off of marketing and go into the development, and I can see the revenue growth level off or decline. And that's just what's going to happen, just because I can't do both at the same time. It's just really hard.
So my third and final goal for 2018 is to ship something. And I'm not exactly sure what it's going to be yet, but I've been laying low for 18 months, like I said. And 2017 was supposed to be a rest year to recover. And 2017 was not a rest year on the personal side. Number of health issues in extended family, the chaos with two new kids joining the family a few months ago. You can go listen to zenfounder.com if you want all the details of what went on there. But it was a very hard year. And so I don't actually feel rested yet and don't feel like shipping anything now, but I plan for the first part of 2018 to hopefully continue to be a restful period, because it has been now for about, I'd say about 4 weeks. It's been pretty calm and I'm starting to feel a little more relaxed. And I know that once I do that, kind of clear the mind, that I'll start to think about something that I want to ship. So I don't know if it's going to be consistent blog posts, if it's going to be a book, if it's going to be a new podcast, if it's going to be a course of some kind or software or something. I really doubt it's going to be software, just because I don't, you know, I keep saying that Drip was my last one and I still think that's true. I'm guessing it's going to be one of these other things, or maybe it'll take a form that's completely different, but that's my goal. Ship something in 2018, aside from the three conferences, the two podcasts, and a bunch of
Partridge and Pear Tree.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
well, you like to fiddle with stuff too. So like, I could definitely see you just diving into stuff to kind of try and figure things out. And then suddenly, you know, a product kind of springs out of it. So I can see that happening too.
That's, yep. I can totally see that. And I've been fiddling with stuff for months and, you know, no product ideas yet or no desire, but I do feel like that could happen. I also, to be honest, as I'm doing more investments and asset allocation and, you know, even dealing with like collectible stuff like comic books and such, I'm running across websites where I'm like, oh, I should probably just own this website because I could do it so much better. You know, I would improve this and this and that, and it's profitable and there's a revenue stream and it's pretty old and they're not maintaining it. And so that's where my mind gets going, right? Right, is it's like, boy, should maybe shipping something, it actually means acquiring and rehabbing something that I'm kind of doing for a hobby slash, you know, investing, but it's in a space where I'm also have a like a personal interest, and it wouldn't be to acquire and rehab it to turn it into some huge money making thing, although that would be an element of it, but it would be because I also actually enjoy, like you said, tinkering with things. So I would definitely include something like that, you know, buying a little tool on the side and improving it, shipping something, because it would be quite a bit of focused effort to get that done.
Yeah, because it'd be easier to acquire something and then either repurpose it or grow it, as opposed to building something from scratch. I could definitely see you going down that road instead.
For sure.
And then my last goal for this coming year is to speak at 6 or more conferences or events this coming year. So this is more of a personal growth side of things, just because I know I enjoy speaking, but I also feel like it's an area where I could do better at. And I think that just practicing more is going to help me do that. And then the other side of it is to help me to focus my communication a little bit better, because there's certain times where I could just be a little bit long-winded or over-communicate. And some of that's just a matter of me wanting to make sure that somebody else has all the facts, but the over-communication is something of a detriment sometimes, just because then it leads into providing facts that are irrelevant or not important to the person that I'm speaking to. So I think that doing the additional conference talks would help me to focus in just my ability to hone the message based on who I'm talking to, and just writing talks in general helps you to do that.
Are you going to cheat and speak at both Starter and Growth and Europe so three of them are knocked off by your own conferences?
Well, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about that.
I know. Because the hard part is, well, one of the hard parts is just getting noticed and, you know, getting on the docket of conferences. Writing the talks is also a lot of effort, but, you know, you've done that enough. So That's cool.
Well, I mean, I only have two scheduled so far at the moment. So, you know, I hadn't really thought about kind of cheating that far.
I know. That'd be pushing it. So if you're out there and you're interested in Mike speaking at your conference, drop us a line, questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. I think that's a pretty cool goal, man. I mean, I know that I've done this in the past where I've spoken a lot in 1 year. And it really does condense your learning, and it kind of gets you over the plateau of, I think if you speak once a year or twice a year, you just don't get enough repetition in a short enough time frame to get better at it. I think this is a good goal if you can swing it. I would also think about, if you want to become a better speaker, there's a couple really good books that I've read on how to craft talks. One is by Carmine Gallo. I think it's how you pronounce it, is Gallo. It's like The Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs, I'm pretty sure. He kind of talks about how Steve Jobs would craft presentations. Carmen Gallo also wrote Talk Like TED, The 9 Public Speaking Secrets of the World's Top Minds. So it's kind of like, you know, how to do TED Talks. I think I've listened to both of those. And then the other one I would recommend, and I'm recommending these because they're all on Audible. And if you're going to read, or you obviously get physical copies of them. And if you're going to read, you know, 26 books, these may be some good ones that kind of kill two birds with one stone. But the other author I like is Nancy Duarte. And the book that I read, which may not be on Audible because it's so visual, is called Resonate. Present visual stories that transform audiences. She also wrote Slideology, you may have heard of, but I really liked Resonate, and it talks a lot about how to craft a presentation by telling a story.
Yeah, those are great recommendations. It's definitely an area that I'm going to be doing research into and, you know, trying to figure out how to craft a better message and put together better presentations and things like that. But I think you're absolutely dead on about the fact that, like, if you don't do it often enough in a year, it's very easy to kind of lose the experience and develop a little bit of rust, I'll say.
So those are our goals for 2018. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsoftherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsoftherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that we don't talk about on Twitter. And if you're here, consider yourself kind of Startups to the Rest of Us insider. We like to talk about things completely unrelated to the show or to startups, often talking about movies, gossip, and Bitcoin. We don't really talk about Bitcoin.
And the intro is different every time.
The intro is different every time. You like that? So today we are completely going to spoil Star Wars, The Last Jedi. If you have not watched Star Wars, The Last Jedi, you'd really, and you mind spoilers, because I actually don't mind spoilers. So I will totally listen. There's very few movies that I won't just listen to someone spoil it on a podcast before I've seen it. But I think Star Wars is probably one of the few that I would not want spoiled for me.
Yep. If you haven't seen it yet and you don't want it spoiled, just turn off right now, because this is, that's probably all we're going to talk about at this point.
Yep. So, all right. First question. So here we are. We're going to dive in. Mike, did you like Star Wars Episode 8?
Yes, I really liked it. I know that, like, my half-brother absolutely hated it. He thought it was the worst one, and
really?
I would probably rank it probably as one of the best.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. I have heard some complaints of people saying, what was it? It was like, they didn't like the ambiguity, you know, that normally it's like good versus evil, and there's like a lot of ambiguity, right? Of like, Poe Dameron and a few of the other people making bad calls that get people killed, and Rey kind of being pretty dark. She's not like, you know, Luke, the innocent person. And so it wasn't as black and white as a lot of the previous ones have been. That was one of the complaints. There's complaints about like the Leia scene, how she like goes out into space and then like force wills herself back. And it's like, well, that's not realistic, but it's like, well, she's super powerful with the force, right? Like Luke.
You know what I find about that statement of it's not realistic? Like, we're talking about a galaxy far, far away where there's giant space stations that can blow up entire planets, and you've got magic wizards that run around like making things happen with their brains. And that's the part that's not realistic. Like, that's the argument.
Yeah. I had some struggles with that too. I think it's suspension of disbelief though. It's like, given what people know about the force, this shouldn't work or whatever. But yeah, no, I personally really enjoyed it. I'd probably put it in the top few. I still think I like Empire Strikes Back is probably my favorite.
Yeah, I have a hard time placing the two of them. I know.
I did like this one better than I really liked Force Awakens, but I felt like Force Awakens was like redeeming the franchise, because episodes one, the prequels, was just so devastatingly bad that I think we were all like, I was walking on eggshells thinking, oh my gosh, if this is as bad as the prequels, like, we're doomed, you know? And Force Awakens like played it pretty safe, but it was still a really, in my opinion, a really good Star Wars movie. But I did not think it was anywhere near as good as The Last Jedi.
Yeah. One of the other complaints that I heard was there were too many jokes. And I had this conversation with somebody. I was like, you know, it's Disney. They're kind of, you know, they also own Marvel. They're kind of going in the same direction with some of those moments inside of the movie. And they're like, well, that's just not what Star Wars was all about. And I'm like, yeah, but it's, you know, like that's kind of what is quote unquote in right now. Like that's what's really resonating with the audiences. I'm like, it's like the Marvel movies. And it's like, you know, the response I got was, well, I don't really like the Marvel movies. And I'm like, you're dead to me. Don't talk to me.
That's it. Yeah. Then we can't be friends. I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. There's definitely more jokes in the last two than in a lot of the previous films. But I always found that, you know, Lucas was not a great writer. Like he did not, his dialogue is stilted.
Oh, it's terrible.
I know. And it sucks. And one of the reasons I think that Empire is what I consider one of the best is because it was both written and directed not by Lucas. Right. And it was like the dialogue is pretty good. Like there's actually some jokes with the, you know, was it scruffy looking Nerf herder? There are funny moments in Empire that weren't in the other films. And I feel like if you get a really good writer who can do a little bit of comedy well, I feel like it's a nice addition to the films. It kind of keeps it going and keeps it from feeling so, I don't know, static or, you know, just like a very serious thing. It's like
it's a very serious drama, like as opposed to like, because the previous ones, they were all very dramatic and not serious or sorry, overly serious, I'll say. And, you know, very, very little in terms of jokes. Whereas this, it was an obvious attempt to introduce some comedy into some very otherwise like very serious pieces of the story.
Right. I feel like it's when I watch someone do a presentation and they can do a really good presentation, but if it's serious the whole time, it's like, ah, that was good. But if someone does a really good presentation and they have humor during it, it makes it like five times better. For some reason, it does, even though the humor really shouldn't add to what I'm getting out of it. It does. It just makes me pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Is there anything else in the movie that kind of caught your eye?
Yes, a couple things. One, I really enjoyed, I was super surprised that they killed Snoke.
I was too.
That's his name, right? Yep. Snoke. Yeah. Yep. I was super surprised. I figured he would be, you know, at the end, he'd be the emperor at the end of the third one and then he'd get killed or whatever. But that, so it was a big surprise. And I liked that they did it. I liked that they caught me off guard and in the way they did it. And that whole fight scene, I liked that Rey and Kylo Ren really had to kind of team up in a way and that they're force linked. But then they like turned on each other and that each of them, like it showed how powerful each of them are, that they're almost perfectly matched by the way they couldn't pull the lightsaber and they broke it apart before either one lost it. You know what I'm saying? Before either one, like it was a tug of war and it basically broke the rope.
Yeah, I really liked that scene just because it was unexpected. I didn't expect them to kill Snoke. And I also, I did not expect the two of them to team up the way that they did. And I remember thinking at the time, well, if they're teaming up, how is this going to turn out? And then, of course, you know, Kylo Ren tries to convince her to join him to rule the galaxy. And so I get kind of how they solve their way out of that particular problem. But the one question that I feel like they still sort of glossed over was Rey's parents, like who those people were. And like Kylo Ren had said in one of the scenes that she was like her parents were nobodies. And I wonder how much truth there is to that.
Right. Because could he be lying or could he be, you know, could Snoke maybe have fed him misinformation or someone else? I think it's a possibility.
Yeah. And it's just, I feel like there's got to be a definitive answer at some point because they haven't really come out and said it. But I think there's a lot of different theories about who her parents are. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. Hopefully they can answer that at some point in the next movie.
Yeah, I think they will. I'm glad that they didn't be like, you know, say like Luke is your father or something. It's like, oh no, it's just too coincidental. You know, it's just one family tree, a little too far for me. I won't love it if that's the truth, I think.
Yeah, and that could be why they didn't answer it now as opposed to in the next movie, because if they answered it now, then they would have had to have dealt with a lot of those other issues, because then, you know, at the time, the two of them were still alive. So, you know, but with Luke dead, I mean, it's, you know, kind of what happens next. Although, you know what, now that I think about it, I wonder if Luke will make like a phantom appearance in the next movie.
I would think he will. Yeah. What did you think about that scene where he shows up on that salt planet? And then they blast him with all the AT-ATs, and then he just walks out of it.
I had no idea what was going on. And I thought it was impressive the way that like, he just, you know, the general's like, oh, do you think you got him? And, you know, of course Kylo Ren gets all pissed off and throws him against the wall, but you know, him just walking out of that, it gave me an inclination or an inkling of what Luke's power really was. And then I remember there was a part in the fight scene where Kylo came after him, and he did this like weird move to the side where he like almost the visual effect of it was such that like there's no way he could have accomplished that in real life. It had to be like a force assisted move. And I was like, that's really it's an impressive move for someone of any age, to be honest, but it was not physically possible for him to do that. And it struck me at the time, like, that's just a very odd thing to see, like the martial arts. It wasn't a martial arts move, but you know what I mean. And then of course the big reveal at the end is that Luke wasn't even there.
Right. And that was when he did that move. It was totally reminding me of the Matrix, the bullet time stuff.
Yes.
He ducks way back. I did notice something. I've only seen it once, and I noticed that when they square up, Kylo and Luke, Kylo like swipes his foot and it moves the salt, right? And it looks red, and Luke moves his foot and it didn't happen. You don't see the red. And I thought to myself, what is that? Like, it didn't occur to me that he wasn't there, but I was like, is he floating? Like, they're insinuating something. Watch it next time. Watch that scene next time you do it. They like foreshadow it, basically. I love it when they do that, right? They give a very subtle hint that you pick up on subsequent watches. And that's what I'm excited about. I don't know that I'll see it again in the theater, but I definitely will want to watch this movie again to pick up more of those nuances.
Yeah, I probably won't watch it in the theater. Well, actually, there's a second run theater here in town that does movies for like $5. So when it comes out, we may go see it, but it depends on how close the DVD or video release comes out. So I'll probably get that either at about the same time or beforehand. But sometimes we'll go see movies that we've already seen just because it's so much cheaper.
Yeah. You know what else I really liked was at the end of that scene when you finally realize that like Luke was projecting himself, and then they flash to Luke that he's sitting on that rock and he's sweating, right? I mean, he is struggling to do this. It shows you just how difficult, like how much of a master you would have to be to even consider doing this. And it still just took everything out of him. Like, he basically comes close to passing out when he's done, you know?
Well, he died. I mean, I would assume that was like a direct result of that.
Oh, I didn't put that together. I was thinking that he voluntarily like said, I'm going to become the Force. Like, my work here is done. And then he like willed himself to become the Force.
I guess that's the way to interpret it. They never really have ever explained like how that happens, you know?
I know.
So
I know.
I took it to mean like there was such a monumental struggle that like he ended up dying from it. But I guess you could go either way.
Right. All right, last question before we wrap up. What was your least favorite part of the movie? And whether that's a scene or whether it's just, you know, a plot arc or something. Like, what did you not like about it?
What did I not like?
I have one. I can talk while you're thinking. Something about, you know, when they went down to that planet with the casino and there were, I forget what the planet was called, but they free those beasts, you know, the kind of tauntaun looking things. I don't know. I want to see that all again, because when we got to the casino, I was kind of like, what are we doing? Like, I was confused. I knew they were going to get the code breaker, but it just felt like this weird diversion that I wanted to watch the other part of the movie. I was super interested in what was going on. And while they were at the casino, I was like, I don't care. Get the code guy and go do your thing. So maybe might even have been the Finn and Rose. Yep. The Finn and Rose plot line was, I wasn't super interested in. I guess that'd be kind of an overarching thing. And what's interesting is it turned out not even to be relevant to the film, right? They don't do it, and yet they get out anyways, which I actually heard as another kind of complaint of people saying, I didn't like it because it was a dead end, you know, the plot dead end. That part didn't bother me that it was a dead end, but I wasn't loving that experience down on that planet and was just kind of like, I don't know. Let's get back to the other, you know, the rest of the movie. Somewhere around there, my son, who was 11, he went with me and he turned and he's like, how much longer is it? I'm getting a little bored. And I was like, oh no. So when we got out, I was like, were you bored during the movie? And he's like, it felt a little long, but I really liked it. That was his comment. And I think the felt a little long may have been, you know, the number of plots going on and that one or two of them weren't that interesting to him.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that particular one. The other piece of that is that it felt odd to me that the Codebreaker sided with the First Order at the end of that. It felt a little weird because, like, I think in classic Star Wars, you would have found that, like, it would have been like the Lando Calrissian where, like, he does a bad thing, but then he kind of redeems himself later on. And there was, I was kind of expecting that, and it didn't happen. And I wouldn't call it like, you know, all of this. This was a sharp disappointment or anything. It just struck me as a little bit odd, I guess. So
that makes sense. It wasn't black. It wasn't black and white, right? There was more gray in this film than in previous Star Wars.
Yeah, and then there was that, and then the fight scene with Finn and I forget it's like the Chrome Trooper. I forget.
Yes, Oh man, we're so bad with this.
Been so bad with names, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, that just seemed off as well. Like, I don't know what they were really trying to accomplish there.
Yeah, that part felt a little more like classic Captain Phasma.
Yes.
That's her name, right? But, you know, there was a rivalry, right? Because, like, they really didn't get along in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? So, yeah, I mean, that's what it was referencing. It did feel, that felt a little too black and white of kind of like, oh, now these guys are going to fight, you know? But, hey, it's, I mean, that is part of Star Wars. That's part of the legacy. You know, it's Luke fighting his nemesis. I mean, this essentially was Finn's nemesis from the, you know, from episode 7. So, yeah, I'll give that. I did feel like when they're about to get killed and then there's, like, the big explosion and, like, all the stormtroopers are killed and then Rose and Finn are fine. I was like, yes. Oh, I'm going to just go with that. Like that was probably the one kind of plot hole that I was like, I don't know if I can suspend disbelief, but I'm going to give that one to you, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's kind of one, I would lump that in with that particular thing. Like, cause when those were the only two people who were unaffected by the whole thing. I was like, come on, really? It's like, I can suspend disbelief for so long, but yeah. The only other thing that there were two parts that I thought were fairly entertaining. One was the porgs, I guess they're called. Is that what it is? Like the little penguin looking guys where Chewbacca's like eating one on a stick or about to, and they're all looking at him.
Yeah. Oh, that was hilarious.
And then the beginning, I don't know if you caught this, but do you remember when Poe Dameron came and like parked his X-Wing right out in front of the First Order ship just as they were about to fire and kind of delayed them. Do you remember when he was talking to the general and asking for him by name? Did you catch what he said?
No.
So I thought he said General Hugs, and the guy's name is General Hux.
Hux, yeah.
And I think he kept calling him General Hugs.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, because he was trolling him. Like,
oh,
crazy,
yes,
right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
I enjoyed, yeah, again, that was humor. I enjoyed that whole scene, just that he was so irreverent and that it made the Hux so angry, you know?
Right. But I thought it added to it, like added insult to injury that, you know, not only could the guy not hear him, but he was also calling him General Hux.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Actually, as we've talked about it, I kind of want to see it again now. Like I remember there were many scenes that I think were really well done. I mean, obviously the effects were amazing. I really liked all the creatures they introduce. I love AT-ATs in general, and they have kind of the First Order AT-ATs there. The battles. I mean, there was a lot to like about this film. There are a few things that, you know, whatever bugged me or that I didn't enjoy, but I really can, I can live with those if we keep getting Star Wars episodes of this quality.
And I also heard they're going to be doing 3 more Star Wars movies on top of the 6 that Disney has already said they're going to do. So they're doing 7, 8, 9, and then they're doing the 3 spinoffs, which they did Rogue One, and then they've got Solo, and then another one that's unannounced. And they've just recently said that they're going to do 3 more in addition to these, but it's all going to be a completely different part of the galaxy, like unrelated characters, I think. Yeah, they're not talking about it too much, though.
Yeah, and I think the third, you know how you said Rogue One, Han Solo, which it's going to be amazing. And there's rumor, or it was announced that it was a Boba Fett. The third one's a Boba Fett, but then that one's in limbo now due to a director being pulled off of it. So it may or may not be Boba Fett, but that was the direction they were headed. And what was the other thing? Oh, I was going to say, to kind of wrap up my comments, there is so much material in this universe. I don't know if you've read any of the comic books or any of the books around this. There are 50, 70 novels around this, and a lot of them are crappy, or some of them are crappy, but quite a few of them are really good and really good storylines and really good characters that are in other areas of the galaxy. And I've read, I'd say probably 50 comic books around this topic. No, it's way more than that, actually, because there was Tales from Star Wars that told a lot of stuff. I mean, well over 100 comic books, and a bunch of those stories, I thought to myself, that would make a good movie unto itself, just expand that story. So hopefully, yeah, I know directors want their own, often to write their own story, or they want, you know, they want to be in control. But I do feel like there's a corpus of pretty dang good material and good ideas that they could explore that have kind of already been proven in another medium.
Yeah. I mean, the Rogue Squadron series was 10 books, I think. And I read all of those. And then there was Timothy Zahn's, which was another 3. And then they had all a handful of other ones as well. So, I mean, they probably got a good 20, 30, 40 books that are written in the Star Wars universe. So there's no shortage of material to pull from. It's a matter of where do they want to focus their time and effort. And it's like the Marvel franchise is kind of coming to a head, I'll say. I won't say it's coming to an end, because I think that they're certainly going to pump out more movies, but I don't see Star Wars kind of going away anytime in the near future. I can see them pumping out a new movie basically every year for the next 20 years.
I totally agree. And they've talked about some of them, not in terms of doing trilogies, but when they do the one-offs like the Rogue Squadron and the Han Solos, they've hinted that some of those may be animated, you know, that they don't all need to be live action. And that could be interesting, depending on, you know, what they do. Disney certainly knows how to pull that off.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not like they don't have the studios.
I know. So. Cool, man.
All right. Well, I think that they'll wrap us up for today. If you were a Star Wars fan and you had not seen the movie yet, sorry, we just spoiled a lot of things for you.
But there's tons of other stuff.
There's tons of other stuff in there that we did not talk about. So definitely enjoy, and we will talk to you guys next time.